What's up, gamers, and welcome to Lost at Sea Gaming. I am Hulking Yoda, the captain of this ship, the SS Gamer, and you have just stepped inside my captain's quarters, my weekly gaming update show where I talk about my favorite gaming news topic of the past week, discuss what games I've been playing, give tips on some of those games, as well as issue a weekly relevant gaming-related decree. This week, it's all about the gaming journey that I've been on and all the games I played along the way over the past month. So let's talk about it and dive right into the episode. Gamers, believe it or not, it has been over a month at this point since I have last just honestly sat here and talked with you and discussed what I've been playing, what's been going on in the games industry, giving you any kind of tips. A Captain's Quarters episode, bottom line. And I'm very excited to finally be back here to share my experiences with you that I've had over the past month or so. Man, it's been a lot of time spent doing reviews, and I mean, there's a lot of great games that I've reviewed over the past month if you haven't checked them out yet. I mean, we got Callisto Protocol, Dead Space, the remake, The Devil and Me, and A Plague Tale Requiem. It took a lot to get all those together and done, and I'll be honest with you, I just felt kind of encumbered with the amount of reviews that I had, and I didn't want to keep stretching out the time frame of getting them out. I wanted to go ahead and get them out to you guys, get you my detailed thoughts on all these games instead of it being March or April before they were all four out at that point in time. So here we are. It's mid-March at this point, and man, has a lot happened in my gaming journey over the past month plus since we last talked. I mean, there is just so much to discuss in this episode that I decided to forego my typical catch of the week as far as gaming news or topic in the gaming news department that I look at and just kind of discuss and focus on that. I'm not doing that this week. I will be doing that again in the future. Don't worry. Captain's Quarters ain't going anywhere. I will continue to have my weekly episodes. Just right now, this week, I figured I'd full focus on every game that I've played over the past month. Tell you what I thought of them. We got a few new games in there that released in the month of February, like Atomic Heart, Hogwarts Legacy, and even Wolong I tried out for about an hour or so. Give you my thoughts on that as well. And man, there's a lot of stuff coming out here soon too in the month of March. And as we look forward into the last half of the first half of 2023. So without further ado, let's go ahead and open up my captain's log and check out these games that I've been playing. Gamers, the first game that I want to share with you my thoughts, it's got to be Hogwarts Legacy, because if you know and have listened to this show, you'll know that my most anticipated game for a long time was Hogwarts Legacy last year, and I am a massive Harry Potter fan, so obviously that plays into it and adds a lot of hype for me in the expectation level of that game and just really frothing at the mouth to get my hands on a controller and just do all the things that we were promised that we will be able to do in this game. And I am here to say, a month after release, in my opinion, it is absolutely a Harry Potter fan's wet dream. And I mean that in all seriousness. So here we are, and I've played it over the course of that month, and obviously I've dabbled in other experiences, but I've still been able to put almost 50 hours into this experience. It's 47 hours total that I've put into Hogwarts Legacy, and I am 100% content with telling you that I am still loving this game. Now, a lot of you are probably saying, like, man, 50 hours, Hogwarts Legacy? Well, let me remind you, if you didn't know, it is a full-on RPG. And I mean, man, I could have never even still, even with that, the genre, RPG, I get it, typically a longer game, right? Well, I still would not have expected it to be as engrossing and as enrapturing and as involved and detailed as it is. Gamers, there's just so much to do in this game world, and man, I can't wait to tell you some of the cool things that I love doing in it. So first off, obviously, as I stated, it is set in the Wizarding World, if you didn't know what it was. It's set 100 years before the time of Harry Potter. So Harry Potter, all those characters, none of them exist in this game, and you are a brand new fifth-year student at Hogwarts. You get to control and create the character that you're going to play as. And I loved the character creation. It wasn't as in-depth as some games, but it was in-depth enough to where I felt like I truly did get the character that I wanted. You can choose the voice and all that as well. So a lot of detailed stuff in there. And once you really get into the game and you start exploring the world and you see what's going on, I mean, it's very much what you would expect in certain aspects of it. Like, obviously, there's magic and you get to learn spells and you go to classes because it is Hogwarts, the school of witchcraft and wizardry. So, obviously, going to classes and everything, it's not as bogging down of the gameplay as what you might expect, because that was one thing going into it. And based on previews and different things, I wasn't 100% sure. Are we going to actually sit through a full-on actual class? I am here to say, thankfully, Portkey Games, the developer on the game, they were kind enough to not force us to do that. There is usually typically a cutscene that plays out and acts as the actual class itself. And then once class dismisses, 99.9% of the time, you and your character will be asked to go talk to the professor of that given course. And then you'll end up learning a new spell. Or you get some kind of quest. And let me just tell you, man, there's just so much to talk about. 47 hours worth to talk about, and I can't do it all here in the detail that I would really like to go into. But let me just say, learning spells, it's a cool little mini game that you have to do to quote unquote learn the spell. And then once you have those spells, you can separate these different spells into different spell sets. And each spell set is designated to a direction on the D-pad, and each spell is designated to a face button. And you can alternate between them throughout combat, exploration, whatever the case may be. And it doesn't matter which order you put them in or what set you, how you set it up. It's 100% up to you, the player, how you want that to flow. And honestly, I would say when setting these up, really prioritize how you're going to use them in combat, because you don't want to be fumbling through your spell sets in the middle of a fight, because the fighting and the combat in this game can get pretty testy if you're not well prepared. So I just got to say, I love the way that the design of the game is set up with learning spells, assigning spells, and filtering through spells. Now, when it comes to that combat that I mentioned, man, I was blown away with how amazing the combat was in this game. I mean, it's just got an amazing lock-on targeting system. It's the kind that I like. You actually see the lock-on reticule. You can flick the analog stick in the direction of the enemies that are the ones you want to go to next or alternate between. And just in combat, it feels so good. Just the basic attack of using your R2 button on the PlayStation to just do basic spell casts of whatever the attack is. I'll just say it's kind of like using a light attack, if you will. Now, when you want to use a spell, you obviously still have to hold down the R trigger and press whatever face button the spell is that you want to cast is designated to. And I mean, there's all kinds of combat spells that you can use, like Incendio, which is fire. You have Glacius, which is a freezing spell, obviously. You have Stupendo, which is how you defend. And then if you do a perfect block, it'll shoot the spark of Stupendo back at the enemy, and kind of, if you upgraded it, it'll knock them dizzy for a little bit. And I mean, there's just so much depth to the combat. It's awesome. You can drag people towards you, kind of like you, it almost feels like using the force. You can push them away from you. You can use Flipendo to turn them upside down. I mean, there is just an insane amount. I think there is a total of 20 to 22 different spells that you can learn in the game. And a good portion of those are actually usable as a means of combat against the enemies within the game. And those enemies, I gotta tell you, they are no joke. I mean, the AI is pretty decent when it comes to combat, and just there's also stealth that you can use in the environments if you rather approach a different bandit or goblin camp and stealth. I mean, there's that you can do. I mean, it's just, there are so many options and so many different ways to take out enemies and approach combat in this game. There's ancient magic that you can build up the meter that is what shows you how much ancient magic you're building up. And basically how you do that is you have a combo chain. And as you're building up the combo, the more you build up the combo, the more ancient magic, I'd say pieces is almost kind of what it is, shards that come out of enemies. And as you collect those, it fills up your ancient magic meter. And once you fill up the one bar, it allows you to press L1 and R1 on PlayStation, and you can use a extra powerful special ancient magic attack. And I mean, these are just... There's just so much there, gamers, and I can't talk enough about everything that I want to in this shortened time frame, but I still got to cover it all. Man, 47 hours. When it comes to quest structure, I mean, there is just so many quests to do in this game. You have the Hogwarts Castle that you can explore, the inside, the outside, underground, in and around. the lake. You can dive into areas. You can go into caves. There is so many caves to go through. There's treasure vaults. There are the Highlands, which is the massive, massive open world area that Hogwarts is in the center of. And on top of that, you have Hogsmeade, the village that you go to, where it has all the shops where you buy your potions and your, you get your wand from Ollivander's. And there are your upgrades for your broom that you get to fly around on. You get to fly on a broom. There's no Quidditch, which is disappointing, but hopefully in the sequel, hopefully they'll have one, a sequel that is, and we'll get Quidditch in that game. But the flying, oh, I got to talk about the flying. The flying is so good. The controls are excellent. The sense of movement, the adaptive triggers on the DualSense controller. I mean, oh man, just I can't talk highly enough about how amazing the controls are in this game. It's, I mean, just whether it's the character controls or whether it's the flying controls and the broom. I haven't yet gotten even almost 50 hours in and mounted a beast yet. So I haven't flown on a mountable beast, but I can tell you if it's anything as well as the broom flying controls are, man, I'm in for a treat. There's just so much to do in this game. There are hidden puzzles and hidden rooms and areas all throughout Hogwarts and its grounds. There are different lockpicking areas that you have to learn the lockpick skill to do. And then even that is a mini game in and of itself. I mean, there is just so much to do in this game. It is so time consuming. I mean, basically, if you get this game, make sure to be ready to settle in, because there is going to be some time put into it if you want to see and do everything. And it's so fun. You obviously get to choose your house at the beginning if you don't like what the sorting hat puts you in. So I opted to be kind of natural with it and let the sorting house choose where I was placed into. And I got Gryffindor based on the answers to a couple questions they asked you. So I was happy with that. I was content with that. And I have enjoyed and embraced my Gryffindor as I've played throughout this course of 47 hours. And just, man, I can't tell you, just the amount of gear and customization options too that you have for the armor and outfits and wands. You get to upgrade or change your wand handles and your hats and glasses and neckties and capes and robes. And I mean, there's just so many customizable options. And the thing I loved about this game that Portkey also put in there is right from the get-go in the base game, day one, essentially they give you the transmog option. You can equip the highest valued equipment, but also change its appearance to what you would prefer it to be. So I love that. It is so awesome. And even when you sell any piece of equipment, you still retain the ability to change its appearance in the inventory system and screen. Speaking of the inventory system, there are so many challenges to do. Challenges will unlock all kinds of different things. There's Merlin trials, which are like little world environmental puzzles that you have to figure out throughout the world. Every chunk of Merlin trials that you get expands the inventory spaces that you can use. There are just all kinds of different trials. You have combat trials and certain specific enemy trials and puzzle trials. I mean, there is just an insane amount of things to do. The room of requirement, I mean, you can go in there and spend hours just creating all these different tables where you can grow and plant pots of plants that you use in combat, that you also can plant mandrakes and use those as well in combat. There's also tables where you can create your own potions and you have to get the ingredients, and the ingredients are everywhere in the world when you're out there in the Highlands, or you can buy them from different merchants and vendors. There's all kinds of a different, just a currency system of galleons within the game. And if you can't tell, there is just so much to cover and so much to talk about that the game is absolutely just bursting with variety, and there is just so much to do. And I'm not even halfway done with the game. The game is separated into four specific trials, and you'll know what I'm talking about when you are playing the game. And each trial kind of equates to a season of the year. I am only in the second season, the fall, and I haven't even done the second trial yet. So I got a lot of game left to do, and there is still a lot of areas of the Highlands that I haven't explored yet. There's just a ton. And I am looking at probably close to anywhere between, I would say, 80 and 100 hours before I'm done with this game. But I can tell you it is absolutely worth checking out if you're a Harry Potter fan. Don't even question or think about it for half a second. And if you're an RPG fan but not a Harry Potter fan, I still recommend to play this game, because this has everything you want from a great action RPG, bar none. That's about the time I got to talk about Hogwarts Legacy. This week, I'll get maybe into more specifics of what I do week to week going forward in Captain's Quarters, but I got to talk about other games, and the next game I want to talk about is going to be Atomic Heart. Gamers, when it comes to Atomic Heart, the game has been around in development for quite a while now, and we finally get its release this past February. I was pretty excited to check it out because ever since it was first unveiled, I've always felt like it had a certain visual style, look, a gameplay style, all those things. Visually, gameplay-wise, it looked very much to me like BioShock. And I am a massive BioShock fan. I loved all three entries, the main entries into that series. And the BioShock 4 that is in development right now, man, I wish we could see something on it because I really want to know what to expect from this next game. You know, a big deal for me with the BioShock games was always the setting. You know, there was something about Rapture being this underwater city that tried to be better than the city and the world above it. There was something about Columbia, the city in the clouds, and there was just so much amazingness there with both of those locations. And Atomic Heart, it is set in a real world location as far as Russia obviously actually exists. And I know there's been a lot of controversy on certain forums and messages and on social media about Atomic Heart because of its Russian location, the fact that it was a Russian developer that created the game. And I'm not going to get into a political side of anything here. I'm just here to talk about Atomic Heart, the game, and what it is that I like and actually, to be honest with you guys, love about this game. So to start out, it is set in the 1950s, Russia. And essentially, the world has gone in a very different direction post-World War II. Things did not happen as they did in actual history. So it is an alternate history where Russia is kind of like the superpower of technology, if you will. And they have been living with this massive influx of robotic assistance and just everyday life. There is some aspect of robotics integrated into that day. Well, there is a massive parade, and the creator of this technology that started with the Atom, hence the name Atomic Heart, he is supposed to be the guest speaker, and the game starts out. I mean, it's just awesome. You start out, and as the game fades in from black, and you start to see all the colors, gamers, the visuals are just absolutely astounding. So I'm playing on an Xbox Series X on a 4K OLED LG TV. And let me just say that, oh my God, the first thing that I said was like, man, this is a gorgeous game. And don't get me wrong, I've seen trailers. I've always thought the game looked nice. But to actually see it in action, be there controlling the character, man, it was just an absolutely gorgeous game. The level of detail in the environments, the character models, the robots, the lighting, there's just so much. I mean, the visual is just an amazingly beautiful, beautiful game. And so, of course, I'm walking around the city streets and I'm looking and listening in on conversations of just random citizens as they're chattering excitedly about the festival and the parade that's going on and about to start and just all these different things of technology that you see at different vendors placed around. And the thing that I thought that was awesome that the developer put in the game too, is you kind of get a brief backstory of this world's or this game's alternate history and the fact of monuments or different key places that you can kind of stop. And a museum actually is an option you can go into and look and read or hear different audio recollections of what it is you're looking at. And it kind of sets up the backstory of how Russia got to where it is at this point at the start of the game. And there's just a lot of stuff going on, and it's an excellently well thought out plot. I'm not going to go into all that right now. I feel like that'd be more of like a review for me. But I will say, just from a kind of a hands-on preview standpoint, visually amazing, world setting amazing, story amazing. You know, obviously this would not be a game that would be very exciting to play if you're just kind of walking around and looking at museums and looking at history in this alternate reality, right? So obviously things go really, really bad. And it is kind of a cliche plot point in the sense that, you know, the machines turn to take over and they just start going nuts. But the question is, as it a lot of times always is in these kind of plot points, is it the machines themselves? Did they necessarily become sentient, or is there a human involved somewhere that kind of flipped a switch, if you know what I'm saying? So I haven't gotten to that revelation yet within the game, so I don't know what to expect. I'm very curious to see what exactly is going on. But of course, as you go through, there's all kinds of different types of robots. And it's a first-person shooter, this game is. So you're playing from a first-person perspective, and it is very much well-designed when it comes to controls and very, very buttery smooth as far as the character movement. And the camera movement is key, obviously. If you're a first-person shooter gamer, then you know what I mean. I mean, that camera movement speed is critical in any first-person shooter, especially more fast-paced ones. Now, I will say, in the same vein as BioShock, it is very similar to BioShock in the sense that you're never, at least to the point that I've played so far, and I have put about probably 6 or 7 hours into the game, if that even, and to the point that I've played, you're not going to come into a room or a situation where you have more than just a handful of enemies. I haven't gotten into just a massive firefight kind of a scenario yet. Don't know if they're in the game at all or not, but most of the game that I've experienced so far has been about the story and about exploration and about just figuring out puzzles in the environment and how to get from point A to B and just really taking everything in. I mean, there's just a lot of cool stuff. There's different computers that you can stop at and tons of emails and communications that you can read. And you can actually communicate with the dead. There are dead soldiers that are lying around. Only certain ones, though. They're not like everywhere, but there are certain ones that are still, because everybody in this world has kind of been hooked up to a certain electronic connection in their brains. And it's this, you physically see it on the side of their skull, on the side of their heads. It's this little wire that's kind of plugged into their brains. Well, the bottom line is these dead people are still talking through this headset piece. And it's basically your main character that you play as, there is actually a piece connected to you. And it's actually really a great relationship and banter back and forth between the AI, is what I'll call it, that is connected to you and the main character himself. I mean, the main character, he really kind of has the kind of dialogue and banter that reminds me of Duke Nukem. And I mean that with all the love, because it's just they're witty and they're goofy and they're funny. Kind of comments, and it just cracks me up. The guy, he's just very much into himself, but not to the point where, for me at least, it was annoying and I didn't like the character. And then you have this just amazing AI sounding voice that is very much a good compliment to the goofiness or the, I don't want to say cockiness, but yeah, cockiness and confidence of the main character, the protagonist you play as. So the banter between the two of them and then just the dialogue of the AI in general, explaining certain things to your character and obviously therefore to you, the player, of why certain things happened or what certain things are. I mean, there's just a lot of cool stuff going on here. And as you go through, there are different areas where you can hear those final thoughts, the final moments of a person before they died. And sometimes they'll give you basically clues as to where a specific item is that you need for a quest or how to advance in the area that you're in, that kind of thing. So really cool there. There's a lot of different mini games like lock picking and different things like that. The guns are great. I'm trying to go quick here because I don't have but so much time and I got a lot to talk about as far as games, like I've said. So, I mean, there's just a great variety of guns. So far, I can use different abilities like electrically shooting the electricity out of my implant on my palm, the one palm, and shoot robots with the electricity. There's a great upgrade system in place here, not just for the weapons, but also for your character, to where you can, and you know, basics like increasing your health amount, your defensive abilities, acquiring brand new abilities. And then obviously with your weapons, you know, ammo capacity, strength of each individual shot, and just different secondary fires or abilities that you can use with those weapons. Controls just in general were very good. And I mean, this is just an awesome, awesome game. I absolutely loved it. I was very hopeful going into it, but I honestly didn't expect to like it as much as I have. The environment is just great to explore. It's a massive, massive research facility that you're going through, and there's the surrounding areas as well. And I'm just saying, like, if you haven't decided to check out Atomic Heart yet, definitely do so, especially if you have an Xbox and you're a Game Pass member. It's on Game Pass, so if you're kind of on the fence about it, then you don't have to worry about that burden of purchasing it, if that is a burden for you, on the Xbox and you have Game Pass. Definitely check it out as well if you're a BioShock fan. I don't think you'll go wrong with it. So overall, absolutely loved my time so far in Atomic Heart. But there's another Xbox Game Pass game that I want to talk to you about that I did check out since we last talked. And that game is Hi-Fi Rush. As we move into Hi-Fi Rush now and talking about it, man, so this game just came out of nowhere. Literally, it was never announced. It didn't get announced until Xbox's last mini showcase event, where they only focused on a few handful of titles, and this happened to be one of them. The latest game developed by Tango Gameworks. Honestly, one of my favorite developers out there right now, because I loved their previous three games, both of the Evil Within games and Ghostwire Tokyo. All of them, check them out if you haven't tried them, I promise. Man, they were very unique experiences and just some really good stuff there. But Hi-Fi Rush, I mean, based on those titles, obviously you might be thinking that this is some kind of a survival horror game or kind of a spooky mystery kind of game. And that is anything but any of those. Hi-Fi Rush is very, very much different. And one thing that I loved about it and that it intrigued me about it when I saw it debut on that Xbox showcase display was the fact that it was something completely different. And what I mean is, if you haven't seen any previews or videos or know anything about it, essentially you are playing the game constantly to the beat of a song. And each area that you travel through, it's a 3D world you traverse, beautifully cel-shaded with graphics that just are popping off the screen. And as you explore the entire time, there's this constant rhythmic flow of the same beat over and over. Now, when I say over and over, it's not to the point where it gets annoying. It's just always kind of there in the background. It's that background music that you would just hear in any game. It's just the same kind of repeating flow, but it's there to help you, the player, because combat is all about swinging to the beat of the song and striking your enemies and dodging and parrying in rhythmic motion to the song. Now, it may sound overly complicated. It really isn't. When you're actually sitting there playing the game in execution, it's a lot of fun, and it might take a little bit of a learning curve, a minor one, but I'm telling you, pretty quickly, I feel like you'll be sitting there in rhythm, dodging, parrying, attacking, jumping and around. Oh man, it's a lot of fun. And essentially what it is there's this kid that's the main character and essentially gets his iPod implanted into in place of his heart, if you will. And the MP3 player iPod is his heart. And because of that, he has a certain connection with music and the different rhythms that he hears as he's going through this massive tower. And each tower is basically belongs to this business, this corporation. And the corporation was doing experiments and was supposed to give him a replacement arm, but he ended up getting things switched around and knocking his iPod into the processing center, and just things happen that the way that they do and end up the way that they do. Well, he ends up getting a guitar-like weapon, if you will, to use as melee combat as he goes through and different enemies that pop up as you're exploring the different floors of the corporation. And what I thought was really cool is the level design. It's very much an action platformer. So you have a 3D environment, you have the melee combat with enemies, and then you also have different platforming that you can do, jumping from ledge to ledge and across chasms, and there's different collectibles and hidden items and power-ups and pickups, all kinds of different staples there, and it's just a lot of fun. And each level of or floor of this tower is a different boss that runs it in a different style, a different song, a different kind of rhythm. And each one is very, very unique unto the last one. And I just thought it was just an awesome gameplay design. Never really seen it before implemented in this way. And I just thought it was a breath of fresh air. And I absolutely loved my time with it. I can't wait to get back to it at some point. I honestly only played maybe an hour into this game, but it's definitely worth checking out if you're looking for something new and different, or if you like music, rhythm-based games. I mean, it's just all the above, action platformers. It's just a lot of fun. Now, this next game that I want to talk to you about is also a lot of fun, and that is Shadow Warrior 3. Shadow Warrior 3 is by far the biggest surprise for me on this list of games that I'm discussing with you today. And the reason why is because I have never, before Shadow Warrior 3, played any other game in the franchise. Never really, honestly, gave the franchise a second thought. Obviously, I knew of its existence, but I had never tried out either of the previous two games. And what drew me to this game, honestly, I was just sitting there going through the list of games that were available on Game Pass one night, and I saw Shadow Warrior 3, and I thought it actually looked pretty decent. It said it was the definitive edition. And so I clicked into it, and I started scrolling through, reading the description, looking at the screenshots, and I'm like, man, just from the screenshots, this looks like a really nice-looking game visually, and it sounds like it might be actually pretty cool. So you know what? I'm going to give it a shot. I'm going to check it out. And gamers, I got to tell you that I am extremely, extremely happy that I did, because this so far, you know, every year I do an end of year episode and I look back and I say what my biggest surprise of the year is. Well, as of right now, and don't get me wrong, I realize we're only 2.5 months into this year so far, so a lot of room left for there to be a bigger surprise for me. But biggest gaming surprise right now absolutely is hands down Shadow Warrior 3. So if you don't know what Shadow Warrior 3 is, what it's about, essentially it's a first-person arena shooter. So what does that mean, arena shooter? Obviously, you play from first-person perspective, and think of Doom, the newer Doom games, Doom and Doom Eternal, and that is the kind of style of first-person shooter that you're going to be looking at playing when you get this game. What I mean is you have arena areas where there's just a massive onslaught of continuous enemies just everywhere, pure chaos going on, and you absolutely cannot stop moving. The idea is to keep moving. Do not stop. Just constantly firing away at enemies in front of you, as well as there's also a pretty decent melee system here. Granted, I don't think it's the greatest, but it's pretty decent, so I'll take it. And it definitely comes very much as help in a pinch. And you just, on Xbox, you tap the RB button and swipe away with your katana. And the katana, I mean, obviously there's upgrades and things like that that you have access to in the game, whether it's your katana, all the weapons that you can use, as well as the character of Lo Wang. Now, obviously, I have no idea who this guy is. I have only seen him for the first time within this game, and I love him. This character is absolutely amazing. He cracks me up the whole time. Every time I sit down to play this game, and I do it in short bursts because there's 11 chapters in the game that I've seen. I looked ahead to see how long the game was. So I have 11 chapters to play through, and each chapter takes me roughly 45 minutes to an hour, depending on how much I'm exploring or if I get stuck in a spot for a little bit. But I've had so much fun. And the dialogue, I mean, he just drops so many pop culture references and one-liners, and he's kind of goofy, but he's also just smart at the same time, and he's very witty. He is what I would say the epitome of Deadpool is. He is that character of Deadpool, but in the guise of this character of Lo Wang. But he's also his own in his own right. I'm not going to take anything or discredit away from him, but that is who he reminds me of the most, is Deadpool. You know, he's got a katana, obviously, and just, I don't know, it just, his witty banter is absolutely hysterical to me. And there is a demon that has been essentially forced into the form of a mask. Like, his spirit has now possessed this mask that Lo Wang holds on to. And Hoji is just also equally as hysterical. And the conversations between the two of them just back and forth are just like, oh my God, I can't believe that I am hearing some of this stuff. These guys are just cracking me up left and right, man. So the entertainment value from the dialogue alone is there. The gun combat is just extremely fast-paced, over the top. You got the melee combat interspersed in there with it. And the cool thing is, just like in Doom and Doom Eternal, you know, in that game or those games, if I remember correctly, because it's been a while since I've played those games, but if I remember correctly, you click in the analog stick in order to initiate a finisher. Well, same can be said for here, except you click in the LB and RB buttons on the Xbox in order to initiate that finisher. Obviously, you have to fill up a meter, of which you have two of those meters, so you can build up for a finisher on the higher difficulty enemies, or more powerful enemies, I would say. The lower enemies, the lower level enemies, you really only have to build up that first meter in order to initiate a finisher. And just like in Doom and Doom Eternal, there's awesome animations that are these fatalities, if you will, that Lo Wang performs on these enemies. And at the end of every fatality, you end up acquiring a weapon of some sort from that enemy. And these weapons are only for temporary use, literally a few seconds or a few shots or rounds of ammo that you got to use, but they are massive dealers of damage. And it's just so fun. I mean, it's just awesome trying to sit there and manage your meter and do the finishers and mix in the melee combat, frantic gunplay. But it's also the traversal system that I love in the game. There is essentially like a grapple hook that Lo Wang has that you can use in certain circular silver devices that are hanging from certain areas within the environment. You can use those to swing from point A to point B. And there's also grass or vines that are on different surfaces that basically designate, hey, you can wall run and free run on these surfaces, where you can just run up the wall to the scale a cliff, or you can run along the side of a cliff and jump off at the end to make it across this massive chasm to the other side. So you mix all that together, and it is just absolutely a blast to play, and I have loved it. And the storyline itself, I mean, it's, I have no idea before this game again what was going on leading up to the beginning of this game, but essentially there is this massive dragon. I mean, a massive dragon that is this threat to all of reality. And it has gotten loose, thanks to Lo Wang and events that took place in the second game, in this mythical realm of Japan. And if he doesn't stop the dragon, then basically it is going to destroy everything. And so it's up to him. He's literally chasing the dragon as you're going through all these different locations throughout this mythical realm of Japan. And it's just awesome. I mean, it also has what I love in games, and it's when they go to these classic style boss battles. There has been one so far that I have fought, and the name of the boss is Ancient Cock, and that is as in the rooster, so just putting that out there, but just putting it in there as well, the game is very tongue-in-cheek and very much likes to play on words, so you can kind of understand where I'm going with this. And there's a lot of that kind of humor in every aspect of the game. The weapons are a lot of fun to play with. I mean, there's basic pistols, but it's not just a basic pistol. The faster you click the right trigger on the Xbox to fire, the more rapid fire it is, and also the higher the damage it does. And then when you upgrade the weapon, as you get upgrade orbs, you can do different damage, like fire damage on the third and final upgrade. You have these submachine guns that are dual wielding guns that they also can be upgraded to have electrical bullets when you're firing them. There's just, I absolutely love this game. Don't get me wrong, it's not the most technically sound game from a control standpoint, but visually amazing. Fun factor is just through the roof. And entertainment factor, I absolutely have loved this game. As completely floored with the experience that I've had with it and how much I've loved it so far. So that was my time so far in Shadow Warrior 3. Can't wait to continue to share my journey with you as I continue through the game. I am towards the end of Chapter 6, so I would love to be able to complete this game over the course of the next week and be able to get a review out to you guys very soon. And man, I don't know where I'm going to land at as far as that review score, but I cannot wait to get back to playing it. This next game I want to talk to you guys about is very different, though, from Shadow Warrior 3, and that game is called Somerville. As I start to talk about Somerville, this is another interesting title for me because I honestly had forgotten about this game. It was yet another game that I was reminded of or noticed as I was scrolling through the list of games on the Game Pass channel on the Xbox. And I was like, oh yeah, I did want to play that game. I was interested in that. So it was a game that I had seen at one of those Xbox press conferences where they showed off a bunch of different games that were coming in the future. And it was one of those that was highlighted for Game Pass Day 1. And I always thought it looked interesting. So what it It's a kind of a 2D, 3D side-scrolling game, and it's done in a very unique art style. I would say it's not normal, typical polygons as far as like from a realistic looking standpoint. It's also not cel-shaded or kind of a, that claymation look. I would say it might be a little bit of a combination of all of those to some extent. I will say it's done in a realistic design, but the graphics themselves don't look like as if you were looking at, say, God of War or something along those lines, if that makes sense. So hopefully it does. But at the end of the day, there's, interestingly enough, not a single line of spoken dialogue in this game. And I appreciate that because it just kind of adds a layer of mystery to the game that's already full of that. And I got to tell you, it's essentially about an alien invasion. And it starts out with a family that lives kind of like out in this farmhouse kind of area in the middle of nowhere. And we see the family just kind of passed out on the couch watching TV one night with the dog and the baby and the wife and husband, and they're all just sitting there in front of the TV and it's playing in the background, and next thing you know, the baby is actually who you, the player, start to control. And it was way not what I expected to be starting out the game as. And you're kind of going around the house doing different things. And let me just say that eventually you take control of the dad. And there are just different things you do around the house. It's at night. It's kind of dark. And next thing you know, all of a sudden, there are these weird flashing lights from outside, weird noises. And boom, this loud crash and bang. And kind of like almost an earthquake sense of feeling is what it would seem. And then at this point, you are really rushing just to try to hide and protect your family and get out of there. So you try to escape. That doesn't work out too well for you. I won't tell you what happens. But let's just say that in the process of all this, the husband gets separated from his wife and child. It's just him and his dog. And that is your companion as the player-controlled character, and the player is your dog. And then you just kind of go through the environment. And as you go through, I've only played about maybe 45 minutes to an hour of this game so far. And it's a very short game from what it seems like to me. But from what I've played so far, it's pretty interesting and enjoyable as you're going through and you're seeing the different remnants of these massive pillars that I don't know yet if they are alien ships or just pieces of an alien ship. I don't know exactly what they are yet, but you can tell that there is definitely an alien presence on the planet Earth now. And you're just trying to basically get through this environment. My assumption is to try and find your family. And that is what I'm in the process of doing. You go through or have to go through the woods that was right next to your house and get through some different obstacles there. You meet these weird, I assume robotic, but alien android type things that are kind of roly-polies, if you will, and they follow you around, but they also, their light shines on certain surfaces that are covered in this energy that is from the alien ships, and only their light can make it go away, or only certain light can make it go away that is activated by a charged up forearm of your character. And let's just say things happen to where you get this ability is what I'll call it. And you can kind of use that to help solve puzzles as you progress. And so far, it's been really enjoyable, very unique, and I've definitely enjoyed it. And I hope to also complete this game sooner than later and have a detailed review out there for you guys. But if you are interested or curious about Somerville, it's definitely pretty interesting. And I would arguably say the most intense beginning and opening to a game that I've played in a very, very long time. So Somerville, definitely some good stuff. The next game I did want to talk about very briefly with you is my experience so far in Wolong Fallen Dynasty. Wolong Fallen Dynasty was announced, I would say, just shy of a year ago now at this point. And from its announcement, I was really excited to check it out. Even though it is a Souls-like game, in the sense that it has that added edge of difficulty to it that those games are best known for. And typically, for me, in my experience, outside of Demon's Souls, the remake on PS5, I haven't really put a whole lot of time into Bloodborne, Dark Souls, the original Demon Souls, Sekiro, all these kinds of games that honestly I'd like to play them, but I just don't have the amount of time to play the games that I want to play, let alone play segments of one specific game over and over and over and grinding and all that. And I'm not taking away anything from people who do enjoy that. I don't mind doing that every now and then. I just can't do it all the time. But Wolong looked really cool. And it was also stated to have not been just a full-on Souls-like game. So I was like, you know what? I'll give it a shot. The perk for me is it was also another game that I was able to play via Game Pass. So I didn't feel necessarily burdened with, oh man, I got to drop $70 if I want to play this game. I was able to try it out via Game Pass and see what my thoughts were. So I'm here to share those thoughts. And first off, visually, first thing you see when you boot up the game, right? And for me, I thought visually the game was very nice. I didn't think that it was anything eye-melting. I will say that I did play the demo that released for the game months ago, and same thing. You know, I was thinking, maybe, you know, by the time the actual game comes out, it'll be, you know, that much sharper. And again, not to say that they're bad graphics, but the visuals just are not, in my opinion, on the same level of even, say, Demon's Souls the remake. Now, I don't know what the reasoning behind that is. It's more than likely comes down to budget, is probably what I would assume. And that really doesn't bother me as much, though, the visuals. I like visuals. I appreciate visuals. But for me, I'm more about gameplay and story. And story, first off, I'll say, is really interesting so far. You create your character. You start out in this village that's being attacked. And you are partnered with a certain character that I won't go into for, you know, spoiler reasons. I'll just leave that for you guys to experience. And let's just say you go through this burning village that's been attacked with this partner. And as you go through, you have different enemies that you come across, different human enemies, and they'll come at you. And obviously, it's very much just like Souls in the sense that you have to be very good at your timing. You want to make sure that you are timing those parries correctly, especially in this game, because when doing so, it actually accentuates the attack that you do. There's this automatic increase to the damage that you inflict when you have a perfect timed parry. So you have block, you have parry, you have dodge. All these things, in my opinion, are crucial to, at least for me as a player, enjoying this style of game as much as I possibly can. I know some people prefer or like the added challenge of not having a roll or a parry button and just having block, and it is what it is. To each their own is ultimately what I say to that. But the combat was extremely smooth. I loved the combat. I thought it was great. There was a nice weapon variety. I was able to use a long staff as a weapon, as well as the sword. And there was just a lot of really cool kung fu moves that you could do that you could mix that in with your melee, with the staff, and the sword. And by the end of my time with it, I only played about an hour or so. I got to the first boss of the area. And that first boss, you know, I was already given a heads up before I got to the boss that it was going to be kind of a, I don't want to say a morale check, but kind of like a hip check of like, hey, you may have gotten to the first boss, but just here's a little reminder that it's not going to be all, you know, cookies and cream throughout this game. You're going to have a little bit of strategy and slow down a little bit and kind of really know what you're doing here. Thankfully, as the game progresses throughout the chapter, you have different flag points that you plant your flag, and those are acting as checkpoints. Well, the last place that you're able to do that is right before this boss fight. So I was very happy about that because a lot of the Souls games, you have to start the whole area over and replay through the whole area, all the enemies, every time you die. And that can be very frustrating. So this was nice to have that checkpoint essentially right there at the boss fight. And there's also a lot of variety when you get to that flag planting station is what I'll call it. And the reason why I say that is because you can then start acquiring and purchasing spells and equipping your character with spells. And it's all elemental spells, you know, lightning and fire and water-based spells, those kinds of things. So very interesting, very enjoyable, all that stuff. And that's what sucks most about this experience for me is because I got to that boss and I finally, after a few tries, thought that I had defeated the boss and a cutscene plays. And guess what? There is a second form to the boss. Well, I died pretty quickly, and you have to, when you reload it, yeah, it's awesome. The checkpoint's right there, right before the boss fight. You retain your items and everything, so you don't lose anything. You don't have to re-grind to earn money or souls to then purchase new things. It's not like that. So thankfully, that was nice. But you do have to be able to defeat the boss in both forms before being able to move on. So even though there's a checkpoint there, I still had to go through the first form again, defeat that form, and then the second form to ultimately beat the boss. Well, I was unable to do that. I gave it multiple tries, and my time ran out for that night, that play session. And, you know, I really enjoyed what I played of that game, and I'm here to say that if you like that style of game, you like the Souls games, you'll definitely like Wolong. And if you have the time to put into it, I think you'll really, really enjoy it. I wish I had the time to put into it, but there is just so much more out there that I would like to focus my time on, and so much more coming, as I've stated, in the year ahead and just in the months ahead. So that was my time with Wolong. But I have one last game I want to talk about, and that game is Gotham Knights. Gamers, Gotham Knights is an interesting story for me because when it was first announced, I was extremely disappointed because I did not want a Gotham Knights game per se. I didn't want to play as Robin and Red Hood, Nightwing and Batgirl. I wanted to play as Batman, even though I've already done that in four games now, the previous four Arkham games. I wanted to play as Batman. I also was disappointed to find that the Court of Owls were going to be kind of the main antagonists in this game's story, because I also wanted to experience that story in a game format as Batman, not as these other characters. So I was very put off by the game when it was first announced, but as time went on and there were more and more in-depth previews and trailers and different things that I found out about the depth that was put into the development and the design of Gotham City and its stories and the enemies and the characters and just all the different things that went into it, the gameplay design, you know, being detectives and trying to find clues and track down clues by stopping small-time robberies and, you know, interrogating those crooks for pieces of information that ultimately, when you get enough pieces of information, you can then find out the location that you need to go to get the next major clue into the overarching mystery that you're trying to find an answer to. But overall, this game is something that I knew that was coming out at a time when I was already going to be playing God of War Ragnarok and A Plague Tale Requiem and things like that. So I did ask for it for Christmas. I was lucky enough to get receive the game for Christmas from my wife. And I've been able to dabble in it over the course of the last month or so. And I've put roughly 5 to 6 hours in. And I got to say, I've actually been very happy with what I've played. I chose to get it on the PS5. I wanted to have that DualSense experience with it. And I started out playing as a character that I did not plan on. Going into the game, I was absolute that I was playing as Batgirl, because the DLC for Arkham Knight had you play as Batgirl in one of the DLCs, and I loved it. I loved playing as her. I thought the story was great, so I was like, you know what, man? I'm going to play as Batgirl. I can't wait to play as her again. I actually did not end up doing that. Due to a story, the point in the story, basically, yeah, there's a certain choice at the beginning. You choose who you want to play as at first, and I chose Robin. Tim Drake Robin, to be specific. And I was actually very happy with that decision as I played through those first couple of missions to get to the point of the game where you actually are in the Belfry, which is kind of your hub in between missions and going out in the city every night and doing missions and stopping crimes and progressing the story and things like that. So I played as Robin at first, and I loved his combat style. He's very much, you know, acrobatic, and he's got that staff that he uses to very much his advantage. And it was a lot of fun getting around Gotham, and it felt very familiar. If you played the Arkham games, you'll be very familiar with the grappling system and going from gargoyles and rooftop to rooftop, and all that is very, very familiar. Gotham City has never looked better. I mean, it's absolutely gorgeous, and the level of details visually are just insane. So I love playing as Robin. I love the story so far, and the different, again, just the specifics of the detective work and having to examine crime scenes and put together clues and have like little mini puzzles in a way to decipher where the passcode or what the passcode is, or, you know, just there's a lot of little nuances there that I really, really enjoyed about the game. And then when I got to the Belfry, you have the option to change characters. And so at that point I said, all right, you know, I want to play as all of them at some point. So I'll go ahead and switch up to Batgirl. So most recently when I played the game, I was playing as Batgirl and really just kind of going around Gotham City and stopping random crimes like people trying to break into buildings or carjackings or muggings and things like that. And in addition to that, I got a lot of time spent riding the Batcycle, and that is awesome. That just feels exhilarating when you're driving through Gotham at that high speed and then you hit the ramps at the right angle and you're flying and, oh man, you jump off the bike midair to then grapple to a rooftop, and then you press the button at the right time to launch off of that corner of the rooftop to keep flying through the air to the next one and grapple to the next. It's just, if you keep that flow going, man, it just feels really, really cool. So a lot of fun on the Bat Cycle and just traversal around the Gotham City world. And the combat with Batgirl was a bit different, obviously, than Robin, and I knew that going into it. All four characters, obviously, they should. They all feel a little bit different. And Batgirl was less acrobatic and not really necessarily about a weapon per se, like Robin has a staff. She was more about fists and kicking and grappling is more of what she was well-versed in, I will say. At least in the combat that I was able to implement during my playtime with her. Obviously, as both Robin and Batgirl and just whoever you play as, there's a very much a big stealth aspect to the game, and you can sneak around and sneak up on enemies and do all kinds of different things to interact with the security cameras in certain environments, and there's distraction techniques, and I mean, there's just a lot of stuff there. You have batarangs you can use, and I've just really, really enjoyed my time with it. I think the story is great. I've really been engrossed in what the story was as I'm playing the game and just trying to figure out and play along with the mystery with this group as they are discovering it for themselves, the details of it, that is. So definitely, if you're a Batman fan, if you're a fan of that family, the Bat family, I would, and the Arkham games in general, I would highly, highly recommend checking this game out. I don't think you'll be disappointed. So that was all the games that I played this past month. Now, let's go see and check in, finally, how I fared this past month with my trophy level progress and gamer score quest goals. Starting out with my trophy level progress. Gamers, if this is the first time that you are listening to an episode of Captain's Quarters where I give the updates on my gamer score quest and my trophy level progress goal updates, basically what I do is every month I give myself a goal in each category. Hey, next month by mid-month I want to reach this trophy level and I want to reach this gamer score. So this is a little bit different this episode because it's been 2 months since I've last given an update on either category. And first we're going to start, like I said, with trophy level progress. And essentially what I'll do is I'll tell you what my goal was that I had given myself in January for mid-February. But I'm also going to tell you what my goal is now going to be for mid-March. So way back in mid-January, my trophy level was 224, 30% complete towards 225, and I had given myself a goal of reaching trophy level 225 by mid-February. Well, over the course of these past 2 months, I did unlock 55 bronze trophies, 18 silver trophies, 7 gold trophies, and 1 beautiful platinum. But was that enough to get me that 70% more to level 225? Gamers, it was way more than enough to get to 225, as I have landed at trophy level 229, 76% complete to level 230. So, with that being the case, what I'm going to do is give myself a trophy level goal of 231 by mid-April. I feel like I'm already so close to trophy level 230, it's kind of a gimme, and I do want to add a little bit of a challenge for myself there over the course of the next month. And we got a lot of great stuff coming out that I plan on playing during that time frame. So hopefully it'll be enough to get me to trophy level 231. So now that I've updated you on my trophy level progress, let's check in and see what my gamer score quest goal, if I was actually successful in reaching it or not. Believe it or not, gamers, I actually have put a lot of time into playing my Xbox over the past 2 months since I've last updated you. There's been quite a few games. The last Captain's Quarters, I had discussed my time with The Devil and Me, which is the first Xbox game I'd played in a while, and that did contribute to some of the progress in my gamer score quest. But man, there was all these games that I've talked about in this episode. Most of them were Xbox games, and they have massively contributed to my gamer score quest. So, 2 months ago, my gamer score was 292,505. With a goal that I had given myself of 293,000. So if you've been following the show for a while, you'll know that it's been a very long road on these gamer score quests because most of my gaming anymore is on the PS5. Most multi-platform games I end up choosing to play on the PS5 anymore because of that DualSense difference. But these past couple months, man, the Xbox has gotten some love, and I've unlocked 57 achievements for a total of 1,505 gamer score. And depending on how quick your math is, you may already know whether or not that was enough for me to hit my goal. And gamers, let me tell you, it absolutely was, and then some, because I ended up with a current gamer score of 294,010. So just over 1,000 gamer score, 1,010 to be exact, over what my goal was. So I was pretty ecstatic about that. I mean, granted, the bulk of that is from Shadow Warrior, but you know, there's still another 500 gamer score that came from a few different other games. Overall, it's just been awesome to really get back into my Xbox and play some games on it. And you know, I still love their controller and just in general the UI and the different games that I do play on it. So it's been a lot of fun. And I will now be giving my gamer score goal for mid-April. 295,500 is the gamer score that I'm going to shoot for. It's not too crazy, but at the same time, you may be wondering, well, why are you giving yourself a 1,500 gamer score goal over the course of a month? Like, are you going to really play that much more Xbox? Well, Somerville is what seems to be a pretty straightforward 1,000G, and I don't want it, again, to be a gimme. So a little bit of challenge, just adding that extra 500, 600 gamer score in there to, you know, hopefully keep me, not just keep me playing for the gamer score, but just hopefully I'll keep coming back to the Xbox as I get a chance and opportunity to over the next month. So check back next month in the mid-month episode of Captain's Quarters to see if I was successful in either of these. Now let's close out the show. That'll do it for this week's episode. I hope you've enjoyed your time aboard the SS Gamer. You can join its crew by searching for Hulking Yoda on the Xbox, PlayStation, and Nintendo Switch networks. Reach out to me via email at lostatseagaming365@gmail.com, as well as find me on social media on Instagram at lostatseagaming and on Twitter at lostatseagamin, the number one. Thank you for listening, and until the sea says otherwise, we'll keep sailing.